Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Capital One has a fresh take on banking. Now you can open a new savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. Banking with Capital One means five times the savings toward your dream honeymoon, or five times the savings toward your family's ultimate vacation, even five times the savings toward just feeling good about saving. It's time to make your savings goals come true. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member, FDIC.
This is a Global News podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jeanette Jalil, and in the early hours of Saturday, the 18th of January, these are our main stories. Donald Trump unveils a high-powered legal defense team, including Kenneth Starr, who helped to impeach Bill Clinton for his own trial. The Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, demands Iran pay compensation for the shooting down of a plane with many Canadians on board. Also in this podcast...
As virtudes da fé, da lealdade, do alto sacrifício...
Brazil's Minister of Culture has been sacked after posting a video in which he used parts of a speech by the Nazi propaganda chief Joseph Goebbels. And why Apple's Lightning iPhone cable could soon be outlawed in the European Union. But first, we begin in the US, where Donald Trump has named a formidable legal team to defend him at his impeachment trial in the US Senate. They include a prosecutor who helped to impeach President Bill Clinton more than 20 years ago and a celebrity defense lawyer. Our Washington correspondent, Aline McBull, told me more about them.
It's been announced that Kenneth Starr and Alan Dershowitz are going to be among his legal team in the coming weeks for the Senate trial of his. Kenneth Starr, of course, yes, he was a high court judge, an appeals court judge and solicitor general, but people know him for being the independent counsel in the Whitewater investigation into Bill Clinton and ultimately because he uncovered the fact that Bill Clinton had lied under oath about the nature of his relationship with Monica Lewinsky, which ultimately led to his impeachment. In terms of Alan Dershowitz, someone who is an extremely high-profile character in the legal world, having represented Mike Tyson, O.J. Simpson, and most recently Jeffrey Epstein as well, who of course, was a convicted sex offender. So, yes, real heavyweights that are going to bring sort of TV-ready appeal, I suppose, to his legal team going forward.
As you say, real heavyweights. Just 24 hours ago, we had that very solemn swearing-in ceremony. How are you expecting the impeachment trial to unfold over the coming days and weeks?
Yes, you're right to say it was a solemn ceremony yesterday in which the Chief Justice was sworn in as the judge, effectively, the guy overseeing all of these proceedings. And then each of the 100 senators was sworn in to be the jurors for this trial. That trial, though, gets underway properly on Tuesday. That's when you hear the opening arguments. And we could have some activity right on the first day, because as yet we don't know as to whether witnesses are going to be called during this trial. So there could be a vote as early as day one of the trial proper on Tuesday, where senators will have to vote as to whether they want witnesses to be heard or not. Democrats want witnesses to be brought forward. Republicans and Donald Trump don't. So we'll see what happens there.
Aline McBull. It's been more than a week since Iran accidentally shot down a Ukrainian airliner, and its embattled leadership is still struggling to deal with the consequences. Many of the 176 people on board that plane had been on their way to Canada, and its Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, has demanded that Iran pay compensation to the families of those who died, while at the same time outlining how Canada planned to help them.
As a first step, the government will give families of the victims who are Canadian citizens or permanent residents $25,000 per victim to assist with their immediate needs, such as funeral arrangements and travel. I want to be clear. We expect Iran to compensate these families.
Mr. Trudeau's call came as the Canadian foreign minister met his Iranian counterpart in Oman. The two countries don't have diplomatic relations. Our correspondent in Toronto, Jessica Murphy, told me more about Canada's demands.
There are really five key demands. That would be full access for officials to provide consular services. Of course, Canada did cut diplomatic ties with Iran in 2012, which has caused some hurdles in terms of access and things like that. They're also called for help for families for things like victim identification, repatriation of remains. They want a full and transparent investigation into the crash, accountability for those responsible, and of course, assurances that Iran takes full responsibility. And that does include compensation for victims. So even though Canada may be offering some immediate funds for Canadian families of Canadian citizens and permanent residents, they do still want Iran to compensate the families. And finally, I'll note one thing that Mr. Trudeau brought up today in his news conference is the black boxes. Apparently, the black boxes on the flight were both badly damaged. There are very few countries that can do a quick and full analysis of those boxes. France is one of those and has offered to do so. And Mr. Trudeau has urged Iran to consider sending those boxes to France.
So you've taken us through the issues, a lot of them to be resolved, as you said. Was there much progress on these issues in the talks between the Canadian and Iranian foreign ministers in Oman?
Well, what the government is saying, I think this is sort of what I'm hearing from Mr. Trudeau and, for example, our foreign affairs minister, François-Philippe Champagne, as well, is that Iran has been helpful, has been cooperating, certainly. For example, we do have investigators from the Transportation Safety Board of Canada who have received visas, for example, and are on the ground in Tehran right now. They have been willing to assist with things like repatriation. We do know, for example, that 20 families have requested that their loved ones be returned to Canada. Mr. Trudeau said that we can expect more news in a few days on that, that some of those loved ones could be returning to Canada in the next week or so. So there has been some help, some cooperation in terms of with Iranian officials. And I think the message really is that they want that to continue and they want to ensure that that everything is done in a very transparent, open way and no hurdles are placed on any of those demands.
Jessica Murphy. Now to one of the most read stories on the BBC News technology page from the last 24 hours. Yes, iPhone chargers, or more specifically, the Lightning cable by Apple, which could soon be outlawed in the European Union. The cables are used to charge and sync many Apple devices, but members of the European Parliament have called for the enforced use of a single universal charger for all mobile devices. With the details, here's our technology correspondent, Zoe Kleinman.
If you have, like I do, a box full of old chargers and cables in your house that you don't really know what to do with, then you're not alone. Apparently 51,000 tons of rubbish per year are in the form of cables. Now, what's happening here is the European Commission is calling for all the different chargers that we have for our different devices. And that's whether you have an iPhone or an Android device, whether you have an iPad or a different form of tablet, you may well need a different connecting charge to charge it up. It wants there to just be one uniform charger that we can use across all of our devices. Now, this has had a really positive reaction online. People are really quite excited about this because for a long time, there were loads. Back in 2009, can you believe, there were 30 different kinds of these chargers. Now we're down to three, but Apple has its own one, which is called the Lightning cable. And that's what the EU is saying. It doesn't want anymore. It thinks that Apple should use a standard USB-C cable, which is what other devices use too. Now, as you can imagine, Apple's not best pleased about this. It says it would stifle innovation and it would be a pain for consumers. It's also not clear whether, if this ever goes ahead, Apple would have to remake Apple devices just for Europe so that we could charge them properly, or whether it would maybe do away with the charger altogether and stick to and move completely over to wireless charging. But a lot of people feel that, you know, it is crazy if you think about it. It makes no sense that we can't just charge any device with any charger. Now, the EU has to have a vote on this. The European Commission hasn't even set a date for that. So it's not likely to happen anytime soon. But it's been a massive point of conversation, I think, for lots of people who are frustrated. You know, you get to work and you've forgotten your charger and you ask your colleague if you can borrow theirs, and then it doesn't work because they've not got the same device as you.
Zoe Kleinman. One of the best-known names in Hollywood is to vanish from cinema screens. Disney has announced that no further films will be released under the name of 20th Century Fox. Disney acquired the company from Rupert Murdoch last year. Here's our arts correspondent, Vincent Dowd.
It's one of the best-known pieces of film music. Alfred Newman's 20th Century Fox fanfare, 87 years old but still in use, is not going to disappear. But from now on, opening titles will refer not to 20th Century Fox, but to 20th Century Studios. And Fox Searchlight will become Searchlight Pictures. The Hungarian-born William Fox opened the Fox Film Corporation in 1915, so the decision to drop the name now is a big one.
The Yukon is a dangerous place. And then I met Buck.
The first film with a 20th Century Studios logo will be The Call of the Wild, starring Harrison Ford and a big dog. It's probably not coincidence the film is warm-hearted family fare, which could carry the Disney logo. Last year, the Walt Disney Company bought 20th Century Fox and other interests belonging to Rupert Murdoch for more than $70 billion. Disney wants to make clear their company isn't now related to Mr. Murdoch's Fox Corporation or to Fox News. So they've dropped one of the most historic names in cinema history.
Vincent Dowd reporting. Now to one of the most heavily guarded sites in China, the Forbidden City in Beijing. It's a complex of old imperial palaces and has huge cultural and historical importance. It's also usually thronged with visitors at this time of year, so many social media users in China were flabbergasted when a woman posted pictures of herself and her large luxury car in a seemingly empty Forbidden City. The images quickly went viral. I asked our China analyst, Kerry Allen, why they'd cause so much outrage.
Well, because it's in the former Imperial Palace. So this was a protected area that was the residence of China's royalty going back centuries. It's a heavily guarded area. It's close to government buildings. It's close to Tiananmen Square, where we know the 1989 massacre happened. So there's heavy surveillance in this area. And a lot of questions about how a young woman could have taken her huge luxury car into the Forbidden City and taken photographs very much like you'd see in these kind of rich kids of Instagram style.
And this woman's now taken down her post. What do we know about her?
We don't know a lot at the moment. I mean, there are questions online. People are saying they think that she's clearly wealthy and she must have a lot of privilege. There are questions about whether she's tied to the government. A lot of local media have been running around trying to find out information about her, and they've discovered that she's a former air hostess at Air China. Media have spoken to Air China, who said, yeah, she left a number of years ago and her social media profile hasn't been updated. So that's no longer accurate of who she is now. Beyond that, we don't know a lot. Her name is Liu Xiaobo on Sina Weibo, but we don't know if that's a real name, for example. It could be a pseudonym that she's using.
So this post has now been taken down. There's been an apology from the site's Palace Museum. Will that be enough to appease public anger?
Oh, not at all, no. This is a story that's absolutely blowing up because at the moment people are off work, so they're all talking about this. And it's one of these social media trends that literally has got the whole nation talking because they've got time to read the news. A lot of questions because cultural sites, I mean, this is a UNESCO site. It's protected. So it's not an area you can just take your car in and take vanity photos. It's very, very heavily protected. But also bigger questions about privilege. People are making jokes and saying, well, can I bring my car in there now?
That was our China analyst, Kerry Allen. Coming up on the Global News Podcast. But I'm contemplating yelling bombs away on the game like I'm outside of an Ariana Grande concert waiting. Why the new song by American rapper Eminem is causing controversy and we find out how cows express emotion. But first, Brazil's Minister of Culture has been sacked after posting a video in which he used parts of a speech by the Nazi propaganda chief Joseph Goebbels. In the clip posted on his ministry's social media page, Roberto Alvim utters the words while music by Hitler's favourite composer,
Wagner plays in the background.
A arte brasileira da próxima década será heróica e será nacional.
The Brazilian art of the next decade will be heroic and will be national. It will be endowed with great capacity for emotional involvement and will be binding since it is deeply linked to the urgent aspirations of our people. If not, it will be nothing.
From Sao Paulo, the BBC's Camila Motta told me more about this video and the furore that it's caused.
Yesterday, the Secretary of Culture releases this video to announce additional funding to the arts in Brazil. He looks straight to the camera, uses this deep, ominous voice, and says that Brazilian art in the next decade will be national and heroic, as you guys just heard. A rhetoric that really sounds like the one used by the Nazis in the 30s to persecute what they called degenerate artists. That's not the only resemblance. Mr. Alvim actually used full sentences used by Goebbels in his speeches. And as you also pointed out, he had Richard Wagner playing in the back, this famous German composer associated with the Nazi regime. So that's why the episode sparked outrage among the both ends of the political spectrum, left and right.
Well, he's now been sacked. He's now deleted the video. What did he have to say to explain this?
He has. Actually, he said the whole episode was a rhetorical coincidence, that he didn't know he was making any references to Goebbels, that the speech he didn't write the speech alone, that he had help from his assistant. So he wasn't responsible for all the words written there. Mr. Bolsonaro, Brazilian president, said that the speech was unfortunate, that he also said that he fired Mr. Alvim. He apologized to the Jewish community. I mean, it still looks very bad for Bolsonaro's critics, but the apology seems to be enough for the Brazilian president's supporters.
Is there any danger that this could damage Mr. Bolsonaro himself?
That's unlikely to happen because when we look at similar episodes that happened in the past, that type of conduct, the apology and everything seems to be enough to satisfy Mr. Bolsonaro's hardcore supporters, which is around 30% of the Brazilian electoral population.
Camila Motta. The American rapper Eminem has been branded as pathetic for comparing himself to the Manchester Arena bomber who killed 22 people in Britain in 2017. He references the attack in a new song called Unaccommodating, which contains the line, "I'm contemplating yelling bombs away on the game like I'm outside of an Ariana Grande concert waiting." The words are followed by the sound of an explosion. Here's our music reporter, Mark Savage.
Eminem has built a career out of controversy and outrage. But for some, his latest lyrics have crossed a line. But I'm contemplating yelling bombs away on the game like I'm outside of an Ariana Grande concert waiting. By appearing to make light of the Manchester Arena bombing, the rapper dismayed fans and the families of the 22 victims, who called his song pointless and disgusting. Russell Hayward, whose boyfriend Martin Hett died in the attack, accused Eminem of dragging the victims' families back to a very dark time. But it's not the first time the star has referenced the bombing. In a track from 2018, he compared himself to Salman Abedi, who carried out the attack. Eminem has not responded to the criticism of his latest song, but fans have pointed out he donated money to a fund supporting the victims' families in 2017.
Mark Savage. Let's go to Mongolia now, where there's a booming market in dinosaur fossils. This week, a team from the United States Department of Homeland Security are meeting with Mongolian officials to talk about returning illegally smuggled specimens seized in customs checks. Meanwhile, a Mongolian paleontologist is driving her country's dinosaurs home, literally, in an effort to teach local children about a heritage which many had imagined was only make-believe. Beth Timmins has been to see how this huge mobile dinosaur museum bus is helping to restore Mongolia's fossil heritage.
On a bus stuffed with dinosaur fossils in the middle of Mongolia's Gobi Desert, you can hear paleontologist Balortsetsek Minjan teaching local children about the creatures that 80 million years ago lived in the place they call home. 11th graders crowd round a T-Rex foot, a mammal-eating velociraptor, and a spike-armoured ankylosaur, all of whom could have been spotted roaming around the Martian red spires of Bayanzhang's flaming cliffs. On the museum bus, I spoke to one of the students, learning that his home is where more dinosaurs than anywhere else in the world have been found.
My name is Chakhlang. I'm 15 years old.
What did seeing this mobile dinosaur museum bus mean for you?
He told me he'd worked on a Protoceratops tooth that had made him want to become a paleontologist when he grows up. Shortly after, I headed to the windswept flaming cliffs with Balort Setsek to search for signs of fossil poaching.
And you can see the layers of rocks.
Digging around in the cliffs, she showed me evidence of the smuggling she hopes dinosaur education will stop.
This could have been human activity. Naturally, it doesn't get this way.
How important is this site for paleontology? Am I right that it's the first place dinosaur eggs were ever found?
Yes, that's true. So 100 years ago, so they found the first dinosaur egg nest from here, from this site in the world.
In the space of just 2 years, the whip-wielding, trilby-wearing inspiration for Indiana Jones, adventurer Roy Chapman Andrews, unearthed over 100 dinosaurs. He took them home to the American Museum of Natural History, where many still stand today. While in Bayanzhang, little remains to mark this dinosaur heritage. That's why the residents of Bulgan held an Adam, or festival, to celebrate the museum bus. There's about 100 people in a circle, lots of goats, children on horseback. The town mayor has just put up a flag celebrating the Institute for Mongolian Paleontology and taken a sip of the fermented milk that we've all just had pass round. Bulgan town mayor Munk Aldar Tumanbak tells me that annually 90% of Mongolia's tourists visit the Flaming Cliffs. Why hasn't the local community felt more of the benefits from that? He says he won his election on the promise to boost local tourism and build a museum to help undo the legacy of fossil poaching. And as Badmer Nimka told me, if they have the knowledge, they can protect their local town's world-renowned dinosaur history and share this knowledge with others.
That report by Beth Timmins. Now to South Korea, where things have been getting a little hairy for the US ambassador. He's been criticised in the local media for his moustache. Some South Koreans have said that Admiral Harry Harris's moustache is reminiscent of a military commander who governed the country when it was occupied by Japan. But the criticism of the ambassador goes further, as our Tokyo correspondent Rupert Winfield Hayes explains.
The problem that some South Koreans have with US Ambassador Harry Harris has little to do with his impressive moustache and everything to do with his mother. Harry Harris was born in Japan to a Japanese mother and a US naval officer father. From the day he arrived in Seoul in 2018, South Korean social media has been alive with outrage that the US would send an envoy with such a bloodline. Harris's mother is Japanese. That alone is enough for us to dislike him, wrote one blogger. Then it seems someone noticed that Mr. Harris's mustachioed face bears a striking resemblance to that of Count Hasegawa Yoshimichi, one-time Japanese Governor-General of Korea. The moustache is a deliberate insult, they declared. Mr. Harris has sought to make light of the criticism of his facial hair. I grew the moustache to mark my transition from military to civilian life, he told journalists in Seoul. And as for his ethnic background, I am not the Japanese American ambassador to Korea, he says. I am the American ambassador to Korea.
Rupert Wingfield Hayes. Now, you might think that one moo coming from the mouth of a cow is much like another moo. But scientists in Australia have found that cows communicate with each other by expressing different emotions. Richard Hamilton explains.
The study shows that dairy cows can express emotion in response to different situations and identify each other by their lowing. Alexandra Green and her colleagues from the University of Sydney spent every day in a field for 6 months, recording more than 300 moos from 13 Holstein Friesian heifers. They found the sounds varied in frequency and duration, depending, for example, if they were on heat, separated from the rest of the herd, or being denied feed. She says the moos seem to encode information about that individual cow.
The key result that we found was, first of all, that they had vocal individuality, so their voices were individually distinct. But the more important finding was that they were able to maintain this individuality across different farming contexts. So, for example, a cow that vocalized in anticipation of a feed reward, her individual voice was also distinct and maintained when she vocalized in response to social isolation as well.
Alexandra Green says the next phase of her research will be to look into the emotional aspects of their voices for the purposes of animal welfare. By understanding their vocal characteristics, she says, farmers will be able to recognise which members of the herd might be in distress and therefore need medical attention.
Something to chew on, that report by Richard Hamilton. And that's all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Jeanette Jalil. Until next time, goodbye.
Brought to you by Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn 5 times the national average. Just imagine, 5 times more savings toward that overdue home addition, maybe even an addition on that addition. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member FDIC.